Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Coffrin, coming to you from Viva Las Vegas, getting prepared for the Consumer Electronics Show. And of course, I have on board my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Doing terrific, Todd. It's great to be here again. And we're officially in 2016. It's awesome. So we've moved beyond that 2015 timeframe. So it's new horizons moving forward here. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today.
Yep, man. Happy New Year. And today's going to be confusing because we have two Robs on. And so I want to welcome Rob Walsh, Podcast 411, and Libsyn, VP of Podcast Relations. How you doing, Rob?
Good, gentlemen. Happy New Year, Todd, Rob. And hey, this is our 13th calendar year podcasting, the three of us.
Isn't that amazing.
Crazy? It's interesting you said calendar year, but you're right. Wow, but it's just the space is, you know, and you know what? I had to laugh though, as we kind of start out here today a little bit about some of the articles that came out, and I was actually a little bit off the cuff mean to a writer. I tweeted him and I said, "Well, I wasn't even nice. I just basically said, who did you talk to? Did right. you do any research? Did you talk to anyone? Really?" You know, and he didn't respond to me.
Well, yeah, so. If you're, I know which article I think you're talking about. And it's like these people, these articles, they're not journalists, because journalism school 101 is when you have a topic you're going to talk about, you get opposing views. You get at least one opposing view to what you're writing about. These people are all like in this little tiny, I call it the WNYC, NPR, bubble, you know, radio, New York City bubble. Yeah. And they're all talking. And I used to say there was two ways to tell if an article was bad about podcasting. First was it said the name needed to change.
You know, and that's been happening too. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, if you see that article, throw it out. But, you know, now another one I have to add in the list is if they talk about programmatic or ad insertion.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, so that just is one way to kill it. So I think these articles, you're going to see a lot of them popping up. And that's it's just what they know. And these people are just writing schlock articles. They're talking to one or two people. They're not really looking at the whole industry. And I think you're going to see, you know, if people ask me what we're going to see in 2016, I think we'll see a more of a divide in the podcasting world.
Yeah, well, that's been a theme for a couple of years now. We've been really kind of dividing the space. The one that I saw here was really, really kind of unbelievable. I haven't seen this one before. Is that this writer, journalist, whatever, said that there was 16,000 active podcasts. So yeah, I mean, that was the most recent one that I was like, okay, who did you talk to? That's what I'm curious about.
Now what it might be is there's 16,000 active podcasts that are monetizable from an advertising point of view. Number might be,
or in the public radio space, right? Yeah,
right. Yeah. Now there's 16,000. Was it? There's about 15,000 radio stations in the United States, so maybe that's where they got that number from.
So I'll add the third thing to Rob's list is the downloads are going to stop. That's going to downloads are going away.
And I should have said my other thing that I always said in the article, the second one was that there's a resurgence in podcasting. You know, there's a resurgence in podcasting. That's how you know the article is bad.
That fortunately has been kind of tapering off a little bit. I think people have gotten the message that it's okay to say that it's growing, but it's not, you know,
a
resurgence.
Okay. I mean, I always point to people. I go, look, there's an article, and it was from the Seattle Times, like the newspaper, from February 14th, 2007, that talked about the podcasting resurgence. And there's been a resurgence article every year since then.
And I did have to laugh too, because I was talking with some of my team members in Slack. We were talking about the Atlantic article, the top 50 episodes of podcasting in 2015. And I said, has anyone in our team listened to any of these shows? Go through the entire list and please tell me if you've listened to a single one of these shows. And we all went through that list, and I think of the 50 shows, there was maybe like three. And the majority of them I hadn't even heard on. So I started loading every one of those shows to say, okay, where did WNYC, Gimlet, Panoply, it was all again that East Coast bubble of just this small segment of shows that the majority of us probably have never heard of.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a divide. It's a big divide. I see it growing bigger. I saw that when me and Rob were in Washington, D.C. I just saw it talking with people. You know, I asked somebody, I listened to a lot of podcasts. And I asked him, which ones you listen to? And he pulled out his list. And it was all WNYC stuff and NPR stuff. And I go, well, you don't have any real podcasts in there. And he's like, what are you talking about? I go, you don't have anything that's created originally. He's like, I got the Gimlet one. I'm like, okay, great. So that's your one original. I go, how about Dan Carlin? Who? You know, and he's like, no clue who that was. I'm like, well, it's bigger than all but three shows. You know, there's only two shows bigger than Carlin on a per show download basis. And these people have no idea who Carlin is.
Yeah.
It just cracks me up.
Dave says, high school clicks all over again. Yes, it is. I was saying it last year. My big thing was the corporations are coming. The corporations are coming. So maybe it should be the public radio invasion is here or something like that. I don't know. But, you know, I'm not begrudging what they're doing in the space, but the press is so – and it is. You have a liberal press and you have a highly liberal NPR. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Let's be fair with that. And so they're covering – and I'm not saying these shows are liberal shows, but they're covering that genre. So they don't cover a lot of the other stuff that's out there. So,
well, I mean, when was the last time you saw any articles, any, talk about the fact that Dave Ramsey is getting 8 million downloads a month?
Right. And there's a lot of shows that are knocking it out of the ballpark. And right. Yeah.
Well, and I think you guys are raising a good point is that just because it shows in the top 100 list in iTunes doesn't mean that it's one of the biggest shows.
Oh, yeah. That guy, the IBT one, the guy Max, whatever, you look back a couple articles on his, and he's like, wow, look, the show made it into the top of iTunes list in the first 4 weeks. Well, yeah, lots of shows make it in the top of iTunes in the first 4 weeks because iTunes is so skewed towards new number of subscribers. But are they 4 months from then? 40 weeks later?
Paul Colligan just got a show in New and Noteworthy with 3 listeners.
it's making it into iTunes top 100 does not mean much. It doesn't take many. Paul will tell you it doesn't take many. As you
right,
use it,
right,
you
know. Right.
Being there every week for 52 weeks in a row in the top 100, that tells you something. That shows that is established.
Well, and it's when it's growing. Mm-hmm. I think that's the indication that the top 100 shows you is that show is growing. It's not that it's the biggest shows. I mean, some of the biggest shows don't even show up in there, like you said, Rob.
That's the thing that amazes me, too, is I look at these obscure shows that have 100, 150,000, maybe as high as 200,000 listeners per episode, and I go and look for them, and they're really not even found in that top 100 list. And that always confuses me a little bit too. So,
well, Todd, how many times have you had this happen? You see a show pop up and it's featured in iTunes and you're like, oh, cool. It's hosting with us. Let me see what the numbers are. And you go and look at the numbers and go, oh,
what?
Oh, well,
big letdown.
Yeah. You're like, oh, good. This is one we can get into advertising campaign. And you look at the numbers going, not right now.
Yeah, most shows just aren't that big. You know, that's the thing.
Rob, I have to laugh. I about fell out of my chair about 3 or 4 days ago. I was reading something and someone had said you had made a quote about podcasters and audience sizes and more. And if anyone's offended here that's listening to the show, I apologize. But they quoted you in saying that people would almost rather tell what their penis size was and be honest about it, what their actual show size was, right?
Yeah, it depends on who my audience is. I'll say, you know, sometimes I go blue. I go, but yeah, I go. Podcast would rather lay it out with an actual, you know, measurement of his penis size than tell you his download numbers. I just can't believe what people tell you.
Mm.
And you know, I think that's true. But I will say, over the last year, I don't think I've gotten very many calls. Maybe because they've done their homework enough. We're like, oh, call me up, dot dot dot. I'm ready to do advertising. Great. How's your show doing? And oh, I got 65,000 listeners per episode. And you know, that was that happens for so many years. And I didn't get any of those calls last year. Maybe people have said, maybe I need to be up on a stat system before I make that call. Maybe the word has went out. So.
And what I try to tell people is, well, you know, we give out the real numbers. We say, you know, we try to say, look at least on the Libsyn system. And the median, people don't realize how low the median number is. I mean,
Yeah.
and we see that 150, 180 per episode after 30 days. You know, so it's half the episodes, less than 150 downloads. People don't realize if you're getting 500 downloads, that's actually pretty good. You know, most shows
Yeah.
don't get to that level. Now, sadly, you know, a lot of the advertisers we work with want you to be in the 5,000 range. And some lately have been telling me even higher than that. You know, it's
10,000 is the number I've been hearing a lot lately.
A mid-roll wouldn't even touch you unless you're 50,000.
Well, and I think this is where Rob, you know, you and I both, because we work with this, let's just put it this way, we work on all margins of shows. I think, you know, I put a deck together earlier this year that was really effective in talking about buying wide versus narrow. And if we keep pushing that narrative, making the media buyers understand that it's okay to buy wide, even if the show only has 1,500 listeners per episode, you know, let's put 100 of those shows together and do these wide deals. Because what's really happening is the money is leaving and has left for the smaller shows. And it has for a while. But, you know, I guess with some, and then we talked about this a little bit on some other shows, is that the media buyers are finally starting to realize that they can't, you know, I'm sure you guys have the same thing. I have inventory that showed up for a year. And they said, what do you mean the inventory sold out for a year? And I'm like, well, you can't get in that show. It's sold out. And I think they're starting to realize if they want more inventory, they're going to have to start going wide. But they're too much, there's a lot of control going on right now. They really want tight control of those campaigns. And we just have to educate them that, hey, they can go wide and still maintain the quality they're looking for.
You know, and I tell podcasters too, I go, look, if you've got a show that's a very niche topic and you've got 500 or 1,000 and listeners and it's flatlined and you know, you've been there for 3 years and it's not growing because your show, your niche, you know, I didn't know a person is doing a podcast on professional chameleon raising. I mean, what do you think the size of his show is ever going to be? It's not going to be big. You know, what I tell special niche, I go, if there's a magazine that covers your topic, go to the magazine. And go and find the people that are advertising on quarter page or eighth page, you know, anything less than a third of a page, and contact those advertisers and say, hey, I've got a psychographic that matches what you're looking for. And contact them and see if you can sell, you know, sell for a certain rate. And if that works, then raise your rate, sell a little bit higher and a little bit higher. But yeah, for you know, niche shows, I still love the power of podcasting for the niche. But the niche doesn't, you know, don't feel if your podcast is on a small niche that you have to be 100,000 downloads to be successful. You can be make money at 1,000.
There's you know, there's I was had replied to a comment in Facebook yesterday, a guy that's doing a dentist show, and he's been approached to partner up with a dentist magazine. And you know, I've sold some medical advertising before that was selling in the $10,000 to $20,000 per episode range. But it was reaching, you know, 1,500 neurosurgeons. So, you know, that's a niche that is very, very valuable, and the advertisers are willing to spend that kind of money. You're not going to get that on all deals on niche shows, but you definitely can demand a premium. On a backup here, and Dave in the chat room says that's because there's so many new shows, right? I think the median number stays low because of the newer shows.
Yeah, I mean, matter of fact, we see the median number drop in January, a couple months after January and February, where we see the most new shows come in.
You know, in a listener explosion, it happens, you know, right now between like the 15th or 20th of January. And a lot of people that are, we've been telling podcasters, if you've taken a break, this is the wrong time to take a break. But I think, you know, there's just a huge influx. I think we were seeing 1,500 to 1,700 new shows a week coming into iTunes, which is, you know, that's a lot of new shows every week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's about 6,000 a month in there.
Right.
Kind of average.
Yeah. That's a good month. Yeah, 5,000 to 6,000.
So do you guys think that the mania around Serial is fading?
Not hearing a lot of press on Serial too.
Yeah. I mean, I actually hear it from just people that don't even know that I know anything about podcasting. When I was on a hayride and I heard two people talking, and the woman was complaining that someone was interrupting her while she was listening to her podcast. And this is over the conversation I overheard. And I asked her, so what podcast? She goes, oh, Serial 2, that was because the season had just come out. She wanted to listen to it. Someone kept bugging her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's mainstream, which is good for everybody, because Serial is a nice short season. And after that, people have to go and listen to other stuff. And you know, whatever gets them in, whatever is the gateway drug into podcasting, I'm happy. Gateway drug,
yeah, that's a good analogy. Yeah.
We need more serials.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's what I really find funny is that, you know, Serial wasn't a repurposed content. So you hear about all this, you know, the media hoopla on the WNYC and all that stuff. And it is funny that Serial in its entirety is not repurposed content. And that guy, Max, was dogging Serial when it came out because the advertisements on Serial were MailChimp and Audible and that. I'm like, well, they paid more. They paid more than Coke and Pepsi. You know, don't begrudge Serial because they took a lower named brand who paid more money. Duh. What do you? Oh no, I should pay Coke because they're going to pay me 1/3 of what Audible's going to pay me. Oh, you know, Mark's not dumb. He took the bigger money, and Sarah and them aren't dumb either. You know, they took where the better money was. It's not that the bigger brands aren't coming into podcasting. They just, other people were outbidding the bigger brands for Serial and other big shows.
Just because the mainstream media, like Coke and Geico and those folks are starting to join the space, doesn't mean that they're paying the same. Well, they're not paying the same CPMs that are being paid by these other companies. I agree, and it's part of the long-term problem with programmatic ad buying. The Coke folks want to just come into an automated buy, and they, you know, they want to pay $6 CPM instead of $25.
Well, that's because that's what they're used to paying on broadcast radio. So they think that they're going to get the same rates or even a better rate on podcasting than they're getting on broadcast radio, I think is really what's going on here. Those are typically radio buyers or radio focused folks that are coming out of the big brands.
Yeah, I mean, we've had ad insertion technology for over 8 years that works. We've talked to the Tritons and the others, and the reason almost all our ad campaigns are not ad insertion is because it's better money with the host read ads. And why is there better money? Because it's more effective. And I think that's what it comes down to. And I think ultimately what you're going to see this year is you're going to see that chasm. You're going to see the programmatic come in. Mm-hmm. But what you're going to see is the shows that go to programmatic are the ones that couldn't cut it for the ad host read. I think you can see what let's call boutique versus programmatic. And the boutique stuff is the artesian. We'll call it, you know, you want to be nicer, say artesian ads. The artesian ads are going to get higher rates and higher returns. And shows that can't do an ad read well, they're going to go over to the programmatic. People that are repurposing content go over to programmatic. But anyone else that goes over to programmatic thinking that, hey, I'm going to go sign up and I'm going to get programmatic ad buys and that's going to be good money, they're going to be sadly mistaken because it's not there.
Well, I think, Rob, I have a little different take on programmatic. I think the programmatic is going to be used by the shows that have the volume. Shows that can afford to run 3 spots in their show, and they can take 2 that are paying low and 1 that will pay high. And they'll take, you know, they're doing enough volume that they'll, you know, I really think that the volume shows will use programmatic. Now that, you know, with programmatic, you know, I've done a lot of study on this already. And what I'm really finding is the cost to do programmatic ad buying. You know, you're looking at on average 65 cents on the dollar goes back to either one firm selling the advertising. That's at least 30%, and 35% goes to the actual injection company. So the people that are making the money are the advertising company, injection company, whether the podcaster or the person doing the content is left with 35% of whatever that gross CPM was. If that's six, you guys just do the math on that and figure it out. So it's not a lot of money left over on the vine. The majority of it's going to the injection and the sales team. So that's going to be the huge problem with programmatic.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I mean, it isn't the bigger question between pre-produced more brand spots versus natural organic, you know, host reads? And is there a place for the merging of the host reads into programmatic? And is really programmatic the bigger question, or is it just the ad insertion piece? I mean, is that, I mean, shows, I mean, Todd, I agree with you. I saw with, you know, some of the places that I've worked in the past that, you know, I built show templates for podcast one that had slots for up to 4 to 5 placements in those shows, and pre-rolls and mid-rolls and post-rolls. So the other question gets back then to is, well, what's the upper limit of what's possible with ad insertion placements? Like, you know, the bigger question is how many sponsors can you have in a show before you've kind of reached that saturation point where the listeners kind of get turned off? Is it 2? Is it 3? Is it 4 spots? I mean, that's kind of the other bigger question that doesn't get talked about a lot, is what's the upper limit of this stuff? Because I know that when I was working at Podcast One, like the Adam Carolla show could potentially, I think at one point, I think I heard 4 ads in the Adam Carolla show. Is it possible that we could, I mean, is that the upper limit, or are we kind of living in a 2 to 3 range at this point?
I think it depends on how long the show is. If you got an hour long show, I would say 3 ads is your, you know, 1 every 20 minutes kind of formula. Ideally, I try to limit my show, which is an hour to hour and 20 minutes. I try to limit it to 2 advertisers. I did 3 right before Christmas because I basically had 1 advertisement for the next show, and I was like, oh, I'm going to just do 1 show, bigger show this week, and rather than 2 shows. But normally I try to limit it to 2, and I, when I'm selling, I try to tell the producers, you know, let's limit it to 3. So some of the other producers that are an hour long. So I don't know, Todd, what's your thought?
You know, I just use my own show as an example. You know, I do 70 minutes and my audience is fine with 2. I get complaints at 3. They'll let me go 3 for a month, but if I go much longer than a month with 3 advertisers in the show, I get mass complaining. So, but I spread them out. I do 1 within like the first 15 minutes and then drop the second one at maybe the 45 minute mark. But 2 is comfortable, for at least for my audience, for an hour. 3, I'm pushing it. That third one has to be a short one.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the question. You know, I mean, Todd, I've heard you say that it's better to do kind of a, you know, like minute and a half, you know, host reads. But where does the 15-second ad come into play? Is that more kind of a pre-roll position, or do you think that 15 seconds belongs as mid-roll placement also?
I don't sell anything that's pre-roll, and I don't sell anything that's that short. So when I mean shorter, you know, I give my advertisers a couple of minutes on each spot. So a short ad for me is a 60-second spot.
Yeah. I mean, personally, what I do for mine is they get a mention right after my intro that, hey, today's episode's brought to you by. Just, I do that more from the FTC regulations. I just want to make sure that I say up front who's advertising on the show. So if I mention them willy-nilly throughout the show, if they happen to fit in something, I'm covered. And then I do the full read. And then at the end of the show, right at the end, at the outro, I do another mention, call to action, another short, basically like the beginning mention. So I kind of give an advertiser with me gets 3 mentions. But the longer read is in the middle, and it's usually anywhere from a minute and a half to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So where can the programmatic fit into this world to actually keep those CPMs higher? Is it programmatic insertion of host reads? Is that a solution here, or do you guys think that that's not going to work?
Well, let's make sure we understand the definition of programmatic, so that people understand in the advertising world what programmatic means. Programmatic means that I'm a media buyer. I go to a website and I click a button and buy advertising. There's no planning. I say, okay, I want advertising the weekend of Thanksgiving. I want it for 7 days. I want to put a Macy's ad or whatever it is. This is what I want. And these are the shows. And they do it, and they write the check. And they provide copy. Usually it's an ad that's already pre-recorded. That's true programmatic. Now, the hybrids, which you're referring to, Rob, there's no system currently that technically exists to do a hybrid. No one's, at least there may be some people building one, but there's really nothing built right now for a hybrid where they come in and they click the shows, they provide ad copy. You know, you do the standard host endorse type of ads in a programmatic design to be quick, fast, easy for the media, and it goes into a big system. So,
you know, I said recently on the feed that when it comes to programmatic, you know, essentially it's the people that are aggregating the ads that make the money. And then you as a podcaster, right. Well, they have, right. It's basically those people aggregating it have a meat hook with your name on it. So right. Go ahead and sign up, because there's not much money there for the producers. And a lot of these people, I've seen people leave to go to some of these companies that are now saying they have the programmatic. And I looked at their numbers, and their numbers were less than $300 or $400 per episode. Think about that. At $3 CPM, maybe they're going to get 1,000 or 1,500 downloads in a month at a $3 CPM. $3, if that.
There's splits on top of that. Yeah.
And then you're going to get ads put in your show that you have no control of, that probably don't fit with the flow of your show, or the tone or the temper of your show. Is it really worth it at that point if your goal is to grow your show to take that kind of ads? I don't think so. I mean, I personally would never do that. I wouldn't sell my show to somebody for $3 a month.
So in some ways, the question isn't really around programmatic. It's around ad insertion, right?
Well, it's the control and the tone and temper of the ads. I mean, in this medium, I think people have, I mean, one of the people keep forgetting this, and they keep thinking that, oh, well, audio, it's audio, so it's like radio. So everyone wants to compare what we do to radio.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, here's what the radio ads are, and here's how the radio. But people forget there's a reason people are leaving radio. They didn't like that. They didn't like the way the format was. They didn't like the overabundance of ads. They didn't like the coldness of the ads. Even the big guys in radio that made the most money, the Howard Sterns and the Rush Limbaughs and the Hannitys, when you listen to their ads,
Host Red. Right.
They're placed host reads. I mean, a lot of them aren't really true host reads, and the local radio stations have been doing this practice for years, and those are inserted into the shows. They're not live read. They're pre-produced host reads.
Right. But
some of the morning drive show guys do live reads still.
Yeah, but, sure.
But yeah. An analogy I keep using too on the programmatic is designed for radio stations. So radio stations have 24 hours of coverage a day. They have lots of advertising space available, so they can afford to take this cheaper stuff. Plus the
remnant.
And plus the radio station pays their talent salary. I don't know radio contracts. So, you know, we'd have to get Seth back on here, but he, you know, you can assume that the radio host is not getting a cut of that advertising revenue. So podcasters are the radio stations. So they are the guys that are having to decide, you know, they're the radio station and talent. So if you use, you know, that analogy, you know, most podcasters are not going to willing to sell their souls for, like Rob said, for $3 or $6 or whatever it may be. It starts out at $6, but they end up getting $2 or $3, which is, in my opinion, insane.
I've had producers that went over to these services that are, you know, the in thing right now, and when it was in Europe, and go over and be really disappointed and have come back and said, wow, I made nothing.
That's funny. It's the same company in Europe. We're moving shows back because of.
Oh yeah, that's a different one. Yeah, but yeah, no, there's the one that just recently came that was in the article, in the IBT article, and you know, people have to learn. You know, we can tell them so much. As I said on the feed, I like to say "I told you so." So we warn them, and then later on say "I told you so."
There is a way that this is going to be able to be done effectively, but it's going to take a different mindset. Someone's going to figure this out. I have no doubt. They're going to listen to Rob. They're going to listen to you. They're going to listen to me. They're going to listen to, you know, and they're going to figure this out. They're going to come up with a system that works. But we're not there yet.
No. No. 2016 is not going to be dramatically different from 2015, regardless of what a certain article might have said.
But yeah. We have to also understand too that we have an infinite number. No, I shouldn't say that's not infinite. A non-infinite number of big shows that all these companies are fighting over, mm-hmm. and most of them could give two shits about the smaller shows. Mm-hmm. And I think as long as Libsyn and Blueberry and you know and Spreaker and you know companies that are willing to work and to try to help these smaller shows have success, I don't think we're going to be facing any issues with growth or finding advertisers for them. But you know, most of these companies don't want to deal with the smaller shows.
Right. Yep. And that's fine. You know, I'm happy with that. I mean, you know, we love smaller shows, and we do too. I mean, I love the niche shows. I love looking at different shows, you know, that we have on board and just go, really? Someone did a show on that? Cool. You know, when I look each month at the new shows, I'm always surprised about a topic that, you know, I'll come across and go, oh, you know,
that's cool. Well, I think that's a challenge to all of us is to try and figure out a tool or a way to better drive, you know, campaigns into smaller shows. I know, Todd, you've been focused on that for many years. And it's just a matter of keeping on that path, you know, and trying to create a platform and tool. I know, Todd, you have kind of the beginnings of a tool that can traffic this stuff to large numbers of shows. It's something you've been playing with for many, many years. It's just, we just have to keep pushing on that direction because at some point, you know, you think about scale, right? And that's kind of what we're talking about here is what these shows need to reach is that and this is probably a question I want to pose to you guys. I mean, let's say Google Play comes in here and drives, you know, an increase of 20% or whatever to overall audiences here over the next couple of years. Is that going to drive overall numbers or is this going to make the upper end bigger? You know, which means that the bigger shows get bigger and the smaller shows don't grow at the same rate.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, you know, a rising tide is going to rise all boats, but some boats are going to rise more. And the bigger boats tend to rise more when something like this happens. But I think you're going to see some smaller shows do well from it. But, you know, I would say if we see 10% increase from Google Play Music, I'd be ecstatic at a 10% increase from that.
If we see 10% in a year, I will buy you both a steak dinner in Vegas.
All right. Well, I guess I have to go to CES next year.
Well, that's probably a good topic for us to talk about. What do we think Google Play Music is going to look like? There's a lot of talk that it's just going to be streaming and it's not going to be downloads. It's not going to have its own standalone app is what I keep hearing. It's going to be built into the music experience.
As I understand it right now, it's going to be part of Google Play Music, so it's not standalone. It is where they are rehosting the content, so it's like Spotify and Stitcher. So they are going to provide stats back out. So we're going to get some information there on the stats. But it is different. It's not iTunes where the files are coming from your server. They pull a copy and then redistribute it. Now, that is a problem for those programmatic folks out there.
Yeah, big problem. Yeah.
That kills that whole thing of what they're doing.
Yes, it does.
You know, we'll see. But unfortunately, it seems that right now it's not its own standalone app. But hey, it's a start, and it's a place back, and it's a native place. And they are going to have direct URLs. You're going to be able to put a direct URL to your Google Play Music page. And that to me was more important than anything else. When they said that made me happy.
So the real question though, that still remains, is it streamed or are they going to allow downloading? if they allow downloading, I'll be very happy. But it just doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you have to look at how the service works, and it's going to work inside that same way the service works.
Right. It'll be an on-demand play, and mm-hmm. you'll have to use your data bandwidth from your mobile provider to listen to something unless you're on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, but so. The download's dead. I read it in an article.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I think it's more. I think on the online radio side, they would like the download to be dead because it creates, in their perception, it creates a problem, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe we should talk more about that, because I've been hearing this drumbeat for a good couple of years now that downloads are bad. Let's get rid of downloads. You know,
here's the thing: the only people complaining about the downloads is the advertisers. It's not the end users. It's not the end users.
I'm not getting complaints from the advertisers.
Well, I mean, those ad agencies. But I'm just saying the people that are complaining about it are the ones like the Tritons and those folks.
Yeah, exactly. Right, because they're used to monetizing streams. Right. It's kind of like the hammer and the nail thing, right? They like to hit the same nail, and that nail is streaming because that better conforms to their technology of what they're trying to do.
But, people want to say there's a change coming, and it's coming because these tools are coming in place. But I always have to say is the end user asking for that change? Does the end user want that change? And the answer, I don't see any end user saying what's been happening the last 11 years in podcasting is a problem. I mean, many have moved over to mobile, yes, and consuming mobile, we all see that. But I don't see anyone complaining about the way the current technology is. Just like I always hear people saying, in some of these articles too, the issue is that there's a discoverability issue. I just don't see a discoverability issue in podcasting. I mean, yes, if your podcast isn't discovered, you think there's a discoverability issue. But from the end users, when you talk to consumers, they'll tell you they can find podcasts easy. There's two ways. They go Google or they go to iTunes and they do a search and they find the podcast they're looking for. End users don't seem to be complaining about discoverability. It really comes down to what does the consumer want? And I see all these people talking about all these tectonic changes in podcasting in 2016 based on tools that the end users aren't asking for.
Well, that and these things have been predicted to happen every year for the last 5 years, right? And it's the same thing that comes up every single year, and it's always wrong. I hate to say it, but it never happens. And it's because, just like you said, Rob, there's no demand for it. It's the same with also audio search. I don't believe that there's demand for audio search. No. We've been down this path. I mean, I saw this effort happen multiple times over the last 13, 14 years of audio search. People don't want to do audio search.
Todd, where do you search? When you do Google. A search, where do you search?
Google, mainly.
Google. If it's not in Google, it's not search.
I don't ever load iTunes, ever. I load iTunes to do troubleshooting for people to see if they've got an issue. That's the only time I ever, if I'm looking for a new show. Of course, I will look at subscribe to new shows based upon some tools we have on our site. But I, I go to Google to find shows. If you can't be found, then that's a it's a bigger problem. Some shows can't be found by Google because they haven't done what they need to do to be found. But
yeah, but that's a problem at the show level.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I was talking probably more specifically about in audio search.
Right. And that's what I was, in audio search, the article, the one article I saw was, they were talking about it says audio search with .ch at the end of it.
Correct.
And they were saying, if you're interested in finding a podcast, or where your favorite NBA player was mentioned, you're going to go here and this will help you. But people don't search that way. They just go into Google and they say, show me, Stephen Curry, and they're going to search Stephen Curry. Now, if it happens to be a podcast gets hit in that, great. They did a good job on SEO in their show notes. But people aren't going to say, I'm not going to go to Google anymore. I'm going to go over audio search and change my whole way I search for things. And that's just not going to happen. Well,
as you guys probably both remember, because you guys have been around this long, Google did have an audio search capability, but years and years ago. but they dropped it. They killed it. It just wasn't something that people used. And that's, you know, we keep hearing about these innovative new ideas that are coming into the podcasting space, but 95% of them are regurgitated ideas that have been tried three times in the past and all have failed. So I'm looking for truly innovative new ideas, and I'm just not seeing a lot of them.
I think we're going to have a lot of failures this year. I think we're going to have a lot of these startup companies that are thinking they can jump in and own the space. I think they're going to have big disappointments, and largely because they're all competing for the same inventory. So, luck to them, but I think they're going to have huge challenges.
There's too many players in the space right now. I mean, all this enthusiasm around cereal is really kind of spiked, which is good in one hand, but we've all seen this before. I mean, you know, whenever you see this elevated, what I call hype in mm-hmm. the space, it creates this influx of a bunch of new companies. And then invariably two or three years after that, you see this big fallout that comes from it, right? Because I don't know, do you guys think it's different this time, or do you think it's more real?
Just in magnitude, but I expect to see a lot of the same of what we've seen in the past. Like Todd said, there's going to be people that'll drop out this year. There'll be people a lot more dropping out in 2017. I think you're going to see new networks, a lot of new micro networks popping up this year. I think that's a trend. You're going to see people trying to aggregate, doing anything to try to differentiate their shows, or, you know, try to ride the coattails of another show. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the beauty of podcasting is the individual podcaster doesn't need a network, doesn't need anything else. He just needs a place to put his files, and he can have his show up, and he's not beholden to anyone else.
You know, I think too, is the network stuff, you know, having built really, I think the first network back in, you know, we started in December of 2004 building Tech Podcasts. And you think about what we've accomplished with that network over the years, and even though the shows have changed a little bit, but networks are amazing vehicles to build the audience and to and really, you know, bring about a like minds together. But I think folks that have built networks, and I know I found this out, is that there needs to be one boss, and you have to have some set rules. And when you try to build as a collective, you know, podcasters are all a bunch of, there's a lot of A-type personalities here. So it is very difficult to herd cats unless you can really get people on the same page when building a network. So if anyone's out there thinking about building a network, you know, as you start adding shows, grow slowly and make sure you get the right mix of people.
I saw one show right now. He's changed to four different networks in the last 2 years because mm-hmm. he's having me change his control of his show. I'm like, maybe you shouldn't be in a network. If that's some people don't work well in a network. Others, again, you know, I think the appeal, as you said, I think the appeal to people that do join the network is if it's like-minded shows, like we just saw Mission Logs just moved into Trek.fm. That's a great move for Mission Logs and Trek.fm because it's all about Star Trek shows. And hey, moving a Mission Log show in there, I think it fits better in there than it did in the Nerdists. You know, I think that's a good move for Mission Logs. Move out of the Nerdist, which is all comedy. Yes, some nerdy stuff, but more comedy oriented, a little more adult humor, into now a pure play Star Trek network. So I think that's a good move for them.
It's been a fun 2015, and I am not complaining at all about what has happened in 2015. It's been an exciting ride. But as we move it into the new year here, of course we are in the new year. I think the exciting part is helping podcasters continue to grow their shows, and I hope that we can see some of this failure rate start to decline. I don't think it'll never change. You know, but the failure rates in shows is still very, very high. And Rob, you guys see it too. You know, shows come in, and probably you got shows that are paying their bill and haven't done a show in a year. You know, they did four or five. Those are great moneymaker shows for any
company. Like those guys.
Those guys coming. Huh?
Yeah, keep it coming. Hey, the number one reason, you know, because I do actually manually send out an email to every show that leaves our, you know, leaves Libsyn at the end of every month. And I send an email out and I say, hey, thanks for hosting with us. Was there anything we could do better? Yada, yada. Number one reason why they left, Podfaded. They stopped doing the podcast. It's more work. And a lot of people get into this and they don't realize it's work. And that's not going to change. I mean, there's people that are coming in for the quick buck. They think that this is a way to differentiate. It is a way to differentiate. Look, what are we looking at? If there's 200 and something million active blogs and there's only 200,000 active podcasts, let's be generous at 200,000. You know, it's still 1,000-to-1 ratio. And I think the number is really less than that. So I always say the ratio is almost like 2,000-to-1 podcasters to bloggers to podcasters. So it's a way to differentiate, but people don't realize it takes a lot more work. And that's why there's such a big difference in the number of podcasters versus bloggers.
I think there's also false expectations, you know, and anyone can strap on a mic and record something. It's, you know, it's not that difficult. But I think the expectations that some people get is they're going to be, well, we live in a society of instant gratification. And for the generation that doesn't understand that you actually have to work to be successful, I think that that's where a lot of this pod fading is coming from, is people get in, they do 5-6 shows and, oh my God, I've only got 25 or 50 people listening. Mm-hmm. Let's stop. Mm-hmm. But you know, at the same time.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Todd, and finish.
I was going to say, most people need to think about where they work. I this is the analogy I always throw at them. And I got a guy that says, only doing 500 listeners per episode. And I've been at it for, 90 days. And I'm like, whoa, you're doing great. And then they start whining about it. I said, well, where do you work? And they tell me, so how many people does your boss impact on a weekly basis? How many people does your boss talk to? Well, my boss is in charge of 10 people. I said, well, you're more effective and you're having a bigger impact than your boss does on, you know, and reaching people. So I try to kind of use that analogy a little bit. Sometimes that works, but sometimes there's nothing they can do to save them.
Or they just run out of things to say too, depending on what the show is, or they have a hard time with co-hosts. There's so many things that can derail a podcast.
My favorite one, I guess my favorite one of all time response was, there were two girls who were doing a podcast. And the one girl goes, yeah, I started sleeping with my co-host's ex-boyfriend and she didn't like it, so we had to stop the show. Yeah. So I was like, okay, that's novel. I'll give you that one.
We should have brought the boyfriend in, so that way it could have been a three-way. Yeah. And that would have been a really entertaining show. Yeah.
But I don't see as many husband and wife podcasts as I used to see in the earlier days of the space, though.
That's because all the wives are ready to shoot us for doing this. Yeah.
No, it's either that or those wives are off doing their own show without their husbands.
Well, I think a lot of show failures are because of wives too. And what happens is the, you know, the fellas think, man, this is going to be cool. Let me start this. They don't talk to the wife about it. And then they start doing the show and they're spending 5 hours in post-production. A wife comes in, what are you doing? And it looks like they're just looking at the computer and the wife shuts them down. So fellas, before you start your show, make sure you have a discussion with your wives about this.
Well, honestly, I didn't tell my wife, Karen, about Today in iOS until after the show had launched and I had my first advertiser. and so it was a good month in before I actually broke the news to her, hey, I've started a new show. I can't stop now, honey. Look, I'm making money. So I actually had to go on the stealth mode whenever I launch a new show. Like KC Startup 411, I was stealth a few episodes in before I told her that I was doing a new show.
Well, because
so I if you guys
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to quickly mention about the trend of more and more women in podcasting. I think we've kind of reached this point where women are starting to take over the space. The guys are kind of getting pushed out a little bit. What do you guys think?
I welcome the women to the space. I think we need more.
Absolutely need more. Yep.
Yeah. Hey, Dave.
Blogging, you know, blogging was 52% female. And the last time I checked on Libsyn recently, you know, looking at the names of people that have signed up, we're still in that under 20, the 15%, 12% range of females. So
the question I always get is, why aren't there more women in podcasting? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't know if they're afraid to ask questions. If they, I know a lot of them say it's a guy thing or it's a geeky thing, but I'm like, no, come on in. It's easy as pie.
I think it, and of course my wife's Japanese, so I'd asked her why she wouldn't do one. And at least her response was that it would, she didn't know how she would handle the criticism or the because sometimes women can be pretty vile with one another. Guys, we just, you know, tell each other's, you know, we just flip each other's off and we're done with it, right? but sometimes ladies can be a little more aggressive and in being brutal. So I think that is maybe a segment of it.
Yeah.
I you know, I've talked with some mommy bloggers because there's a lot of mommy bloggers and very few, not many mommy podcasters comparatively. And the number one thing I heard was, it's a lot easier for me to blog on my iPad moving from room to room as I'm picking up the kid while doing a podcast, getting a quiet environment to sit down and record. It's almost impossible in my house.
Right.
Yeah. So that, you know, that was the one big one that I heard was, it was just, there's more opportunity for them to blog because they can just stop and do whatever they're doing, cook, clean, go to work, whatever it is. Again, this is mommy blogger, so don't take it out on me, women, for, you know, saying this is all home stuff. But again, I was on the mommy blogger side. They were saying, look, I have more opportunity in the day to do the blogging than I do for the podcasting, because to do the podcasting, I have to wait till everybody's asleep. And by that time, I'm exhausted and I'm asleep. Hmm.
So I tell you, the women that are doing podcasts do a terrific job, though. I think there's huge opportunity for them, and their native social media kind of oriented folks too, much more than guys are. I mean, I think that, you know, and we're starting to see some of the top podcasters are women now. So I mean, I think it's definitely a movement that's going to continue. But Rob, I mean, you're right. For a lot of women that have kids at home and stuff like that, it's probably not a good option.
Yeah, I mean, I schedule my recording when everybody's asleep. You know, I do most of my recording after 9 p.m.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't, you know, I couldn't do it during the daytime when the kids are running around the house. Right now I have them here and I'm like, I had to basically tell them, if you turn the volume up on the Xbox while I'm in there recording, there'll be no more Xbox for the rest of the day.
No Xbox for you.
Dave, I'm glad you jumped in here, because inquiring minds want to know, you've been on a bit of a rant, YouTube video, Google Plus, love to hear. I know you don't want to say the company, but why don't you give us all a little insight into what you have been saying here last couple of days.
This morning I sent an email to the guy that said, hey, just so you know, you're kind of asking for a lot of stuff here and you have no idea what you're asking for. There's a company, it's a new company that they want to, you guessed it, dynamically insert ads into your podcast. And here's all you have to do. This was an exact quote. He said, all you have to do is give me your feed, and then we'll give you another one to give your audience. That means here's your feed. Here's this guy who, where's he from? How, don't know. He's got a nice white sheet behind him. And then your audience. So when this guy goes away, because as I've heard you guys say, we're running out of advertisers, right? Because people don't want to podcast. They don't want to advertise wide or whatever. So because anybody who really needs an advertiser, anybody who has enough downloads, they don't have a problem finding advertisers. So got all these little shows. So when this guy goes away, because he's not going to find advertisers, a la audiometric.io, who got purchased by whatever it was, Penelope or somebody, the Slate, somebody.
Slate Penelope.
Yeah, so they had a great system. They just didn't have any advertisers. And so when this guy goes away, and I hope he sticks around, who knows, maybe you'll find something. But now, unless this guy has a redirect, you've now got an empty space between you and your audience. And I was like, this is such, I hate to see. Because he's like, are you in? Come on in. We're going to make you money. And I'm like, and I don't think this guy is evil. I just don't think he knows what he's talking about. I think he's an avid podcast listener. He's a geek. And went, this is going to be a piece of cake. Just give me your feed. And I'm like, No, that's like, you're not going to have a radio station go, here, just have our transmitter. Go ahead and you can put whatever you want on it. And I asked him, I said, number one, who are the ads? Do I get to pick who's on it? I know I can pick where they go, but he's just like, look, we're going to make money. Come on in. And I'm like, no, it's just not going to work that way.
So which company is this, or you don't want to say?
I'll say it. It's Glycast, Glycast.
Never heard of him.
Yeah,
never
heard of him. Brand new, and I think he has 39 podcasters signed up. Glycast, Glycast.com. I said I'll be more than happy to talk to you, but I'm like, let me see here. You have 11 advertisers on board and 39 podcasters on board. And there was another company that came out, cast.market, which is weird because it's not .market.com. Same thing. And I went over and checked them out, and there's no advertisers because they're all on the CPM thing, of course. And they're, you know, it's really, really low. So nobody wants that. And
And you're going to see a lot more of this. I mean, in the next coming year or two. I mean, people are doing these little startup weekends and, hey, let's do something for podcasting. You know, that's the thing. Oh, we got to do something for podcasting because I listen to podcasts and I know a better way. Seen it before. Poddango.
All they got to do is listen to the past 10 episodes of the show and they'll figure out how to do it the right way.
I've had a couple streaming people that are thinking of getting into the podcasting space, and it's the same thing, dynamically inserted ads for $2 CPM. And I'm like, I looked at my my stats and I'm like, I would have made like $20 last month. And I'm like, you know, granted it would have paid for my hosting bill, but I don't want to inject, you know, ads that I hope fit my audience that aren't going to work. I'm like, I just love the fact that it's like, just give me your feed. And I'm like, to the brand new podcaster, that might like, oh, easy, here it is. Yeah, I'm like, this is a really bad idea.
You know, here's the problem that's going to happen. And this is, you've got people that are taking advertising at $6. And they're going to try to, these media buyers are sharks. And they're all about getting, you know, the best deal they can for their buyer, having the best performance. And they can get super performance out of a podcast at $2. They'll buy it all day long. And when someone says to me, when they call me and I say, and I laugh at them, well, I don't laugh at them, but I'm like, no, we do 20 to 25, actually 18 to 25 is kind of a good range. No, they're like, well, why not? I'm getting it over here. I'm like, well, we don't work that way. And you spend this time educating them and they don't buy any advertising anyway. They go off and they buy it at $6 at, you know, whoever, and that's going to hurt the space.
See, that's, when I hear that, and I hear all these companies that want to get into advertising podcasting, and yay, that's good to hear, but I hope they got a teaching degree because you've got to educate a lot of these advertisers because the big advertisers are going to go with these other companies. They're going to go with you guys. You guys got, you know, big outreaches and you got big numbers, but the little guys...
They go where they can get the most for their dollar. So just let's not be... You know, if they can get it at $6 over at X Network and they have to pay me 20 or 25, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Nope. It's spooky. But yeah, that's my latest rant.
So as we move into the next year here, where do you guys think podcast metrics needs to evolve to? I know that the NPR public radio folks are working on their own kind of standard spec. You know, the IEB is working on a standard spec. There's the traditional podcasters, you know, Libsyn, Raw Voice, Podtrac, all those guys that kind of have been doing stuff. You know, all you guys have been doing your own kind of metrics based on the 2008 standard that we came up with. Where do we go from here, guys? I mean, what's the big thing? Are we going to see a split in what the standards look like between the public radio folks and everybody else, or what's going to happen on that? You think?
Rob, I've been talking about this a lot. I'll let you give your take on what's happening at the IAB.
Hopefully, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I know what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see the IAB be that place that can be the standard. And right now, as of late,
how the meetings have been going, it's been looking more positive. You know, Angelo has done a great job educating people in the IAB. I think more than anybody else, Angelo deserves a pat on the back next time you guys see him at one of the meetups or one of the podcast events of your podcaster, because I think he's done more to help podcasting with his education of the IAB than anyone else. So I'm hoping that the IAB continues down the path. There was a major roadblock impediment in the IAB, which seems to be gone now. So I think the last few meetings have gone very well. So I'm hoping that's where it goes. I hope this whole NPR radio thing goes away. And because it's just going to be, if they try to push that and the IAB does their thing at the same time, it's going to be confusing. It's going to confuse people.
The NPR folks all in the last meeting, and they say, quote unquote, they're going to show us their data. But again, I think it's, you know, those that don't know Angelo, Angelo's my CEO at Blueberry. I think it will be between Angelo, Rob, and Rob Walsh and the folks at PodTrack to go back and once again, for a better word, you know, hammer these guys to make them understand that their methodology may not be completely sound in some of the things that they're proposing. So it's a negotiation work in progress. But I think we are a year ago, things were frantic and meetings were being, you know,
railroaded.
And they were really truly being railroaded. There was an attempt to sabotage the IAB effort, and that sabotage has left the building. So we're making progress.
Do you guys think it's completely left the building, or is it just kind of changed its stripes?
I think the power that of the persona of that personality that was in there is gone. And I think that was really a big thing. I think the ones that are in there now don't have, they don't have that strength or arrogance behind them to stand up, to it.
Well, here's what happened, Rob.
At least
in NAB in April, they lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They lost. We put it on, we threw it on a board and gave 13 separate examples why they were wrong. And at that point, they said, uncle, they gave up.
Yeah.
They lost.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, they're still doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
So where does a company like Nielsen fit into this? You know, Rob and I were both back at the Nielsen conference. They have this SDK that they're going to be launching here in the first part of 2016 here. They're going to try and get their hooks into all of the platforms that they can get plugged into to start aggregating numbers. Do you think it's good that we have a third party like Nielsen getting into this space? I think that the problem is, as been expressed in the past, is Apple here on this plan on their part.
And I said to them afterwards, I said, you know, have you really been talking to Apple? I go, I don't see Apple ever letting you in. And they were like, well, we're hoping we can talk to them. You know, it was like, no. And I said, look, if Tim Cook comes out and says a couple weeks ago, right after the Paris attacks, that we don't want to give the government backdoor and access into our stuff, and we consider privacy paramount. Why in the world do you think they're going to let your SDK in to get advertising information if they're not willing to help the governments with terror, quote unquote, terror stuff? So I just say, I just think it's an unrealistic expectation to think that Apple's going to let them in with their SDK. I just don't see it happening. It could be wrong, but I just don't see it.
But Rob, are you really talking about equivalence here? Is it really equivalent getting download data about podcasts at the same scale of getting user information?
It's still privacy. NSA. It's still privacy. It's still privacy issues. It's about what the end users, the customers of Apple, are doing with the product. And I think people don't look at Apple and understand that Apple looks at things a lot different than Google and Facebook. Google and Facebook, you're the product. With Apple, you're the customer.
But
Apple's relationship has always been they don't give out customer data, period.
But from what I gathered talking to them, though, Nielsen is already working with Apple on their TV side. So
yeah. Well, I mean, again, we'll see what happens, but I would be very surprised to see Apple releasing out playback information at the level it would be needed for that SDK to work.
And without it, that's 85% of their answer solution is not available.
Right. Well, I mean, unless they go directly to you guys, but that's not going to give them even all the picture, because once a file's been downloaded,
we worked with Nielsen, just to let you know, we worked with Nielsen for over 5-6 years. We worked with them where they had their tentacles into our servers for Nielsen net ratings. And every time there was a request, they got that request information and they were tracking with us and we were working with them and back and forth for our algorithm. They pulled the plug on that. We didn't get rid of them. They got rid of us as a customer. They fired us as a customer for Nielsen net ratings. So there was that already with Nielsen, and I talked to them about that. I said, why don't you guys just turn back Nielsen net ratings back on? You'll get better information that way. So who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
I think though the challenge too ends up being that, there's so many different ways and so many different places podcasts are consumed right now. They're going to have a big challenge to get all that information back. Again, they can come to the source hosting companies and get some of that data, but again, it doesn't tell the whole picture. And you know, it's that the active play, we can definitely get the data for them on an active play, but for the folks that are downloading, you know, it goes off into never land. I think the thing that we'll have to watch for is if they start using some partial data to come up with numbers. I would expect they're going to want something. They're going to push to get something and put out some sort of report because they have to protect their business model. But one thing's for sure, they're not getting something from me without me getting something from them. There has to be quid pro. I'm not giving them information and then having to pay tens of thousands of dollars to get access to the data. If I can't provide data back to the content creator on what Nielsen is saying about their show, it's not worth it. You know, my interest is taking, and I'm sure Rob, you feel this maybe the same way. We want to protect our customers, and we want to give them good data, reliable data. So, and if they're going to charge for that data, which that's the business they're in, I don't see how it's going to work.
So they would basically be tying into your back end and then charging you to get the stats that you gave.
Right.
Wow.
Well, it would be stats from the overall industry, not just from Todd.
Right.
And just to let you know, we used the Nielsen numbers. We did pay for it, but we used it all for validating as a third party for ad campaigns. We used to use their numbers to say, hey, here's what the Nielsen numbers were for your ad campaign. It wasn't anything that was ever customer facing, but the numbers were almost identical to what we had for our system anyway.
Yeah. If I'm giving them something, I'm not paying them to get the data back. Sorry, it's not going to work that way.
I'm sure, Todd, that you can strike a special deal with them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had an ad network that's out there say, hey, they want us to create an API for them to pull our stats. And I'm like, okay, well, what are you going to give us as a, you know, cut on this thing? And they're like, nothing. So we're going to do all this work for you and we get nothing for it. I go, explain to me why I'm supposed to go to my boss with this great, great offer. So it's just funny that what some expectations are out there on some ad networks.
Well, and that also raises another question about the Google API, right? I mean, have you heard, has Google pushed that out? Because the guy I talked to over there, same guy that you guys are talking to too, he said that API was going to be put out soon, but it hasn't shown up yet.
Are you talking about for stats, getting the stats back?
For stats from the Google Play folks.
Yeah, as far as I know, it's not ready yet, but they're not ready to launch yet either. So.
Yeah. But it takes time to get those APIs integrated, so they should be getting those out before they launch.
Yeah.
They're usually relatively fast.
Yeah.
20 minutes.
And we did it. We did an API with that with Spotify. So we have the API. We do that where we pull back stats. If you're one of the ones Spotify selected, you get the Spotify stats and your Libsyn stats now as well. So you don't have to go there. But you know, Google Play is going to have a place for you to go and check your stats in their system anyway. So you're going to be able to check your stats in the Google system as a podcaster. Now we're going to bring it into your Libsyn stats, and so that you don't have to go there. But
they'll have available for stats for the podcasters as well.
And they did participate a little bit on at least one of the IAB meetings. We haven't seen them only but once, but so be curious to see how if they throw a wrench in the monkey works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if the Nielsen folks get involved in the IAB. Probably not.
Yeah, that would seem to be would almost be a. I would be surprised if they're not already a member, but maybe they aren't.
But, yeah, I don't remember seeing anybody from Nielsen in any of the calls.
Me neither. Yeah. Well, they haven't. You know, we'll see when they start calling the companies and trying to get in. You know, player information and player interfaces and all that. So.
So where do you guys see the next big opportunity? I mean, what can we do as an industry to push the ball forward here as you look in 2016 that's not being talked about in these prediction articles?
Dave, any predictions on your part?
To me, if everybody that listens to a podcast could go to their neighbor, their friends, their aunt, their uncle, whoever, and just tell them about it. To me, it seems like once it's the first potato chip. You know, once you get that first one, you're like, those are pretty good. But I don't think nobody's serving the potato chips. We're all kind of, you know, all the podcasters are talking to each other. We need to get grandma and mom and cousin Sal involved to say, you have a phone? Oh, cool. Have you ever listened to podcasts? You know, because you know cousin Sal or Uncle Ernie or whoever. Oh, you're in a NASCAR. Hold on, check this out. Here's a NASCAR podcast. Give them that first potato chip. I think I would like to see that because it just seems like once people find them, they're like, these are awesome. And especially if you can recommend something that's not three guys and one brain. You know, I think we've all heard that show enough. And it's not maybe, you know, cereal, you know, something that would fit them. To where that power of the niche comes in and really hooks them in. To me, it just seems like once you get somebody on that first podcast, they're like, oh, wow, these are cool. And then they quit listening to radio and they're off to the races. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it is a gateway kind of thing. You know, the usage patterns do show that, you know, you get a person hooked on one good podcast and they consume more and more and more. There's like an escalation that actually happens. It's just getting those new users to try it first, right?
That's it.
I'm not quite sure how to do that.
Yeah.
Rob, what do you think the secret sauce is missing? Anything?
It's what, you know, it's always been word of mouth marketing. You know, it's just about what Dave said. It's having people tell their friends. There's no magic bullet. I think everyone wants to see this magic bullet that's going to cause a hockey stick growth in consumption and uptakes and advertising. There isn't. It's always been a steady growth. Todd, you've seen it over the years. We've seen it. It's just been steady growth. And I think it's an unrealistic expectation to expect a hockey stick at this point or any point in the medium future. I think it's just going to be continued steady growth. And that has to do with word of mouth marketing. It'd be great to be more word of mouth. It was great that Serial came along because that was a podcast that was geared towards newspaper reporters. So newspaper reporters reported about it. And hence we got a lot of coverage on podcasting in the last year. That's where Serial came in.
You know, one thing I will say, even though we kind of dog on some of the articles that have been written recently, no press is bad press. So anytime right. They're talking about podcasting is good. It's we need more of the same. And you know, reporters work on deadlines. So I always tell podcasters that if you have a, you know, first of all, have a contact on your website that you can be reached out to because half of you don't. And I would just say, no, if you don't have a contact page on your website, you're an idiot. Yeah. And I'm just being frank because I got a call from a New York Post. They were looking for shows that were doing movie reviews. This is a call that came in on Thursday before I'm getting ready to get on an airplane. And she wanted a few shows that did movie reviews and that were doing specific stuff for Oscars. And I'm like, sure, I've got, here's five, and here's their email addresses, and here's their website. And but I was able to respond to an email from her in like, you know, 10 minutes. Her deadline was like 2 hours. So if you don't have an email address that you're monitoring, that you're checking every day, you're going to miss out on opportunities to be interviewed by the New York Post, big newspaper. You get a mention there, that's immediate. That's a bang boost for your show. So have some way people can contact you if you're a podcaster.
Well, I would also just, you know, any journalists or writers that are considering articles about podcasting, you might want to talk to some folks, you know, like Rob and Todd and myself and Dave before you actually write your article to kind of vet your facts.
Yeah, journalism 101, by the way, is if you have a belief and there's an opinion, you still have to get a counter belief. If you want a really valid article, you can't get all people that are saying one thing and then go, oh, this is the way it's going to be. Well, that's because you only talk to people that think that way.
Right.
Get a counterbalance to your article.
Yeah.
There are people in this space that are kind of willing to, I guess, bend the truth for agenda reasons, and give people the wrong information. And it could just because of their own misinformation, but there are a lot of people getting quoted in this space that don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To just echo Todd, I just had an episode where I'm on my favorite podcast. I do an episode every year at the end of it that I have my audience say, what's your favorite podcast and why? So I went to the podcast where other people said, hey, you're my favorite podcast. And in trying to contact podcasters was ridiculously hard. My favorite was the only option was Twitter. And I'm like, so now I've got to follow you so I can direct message you. It was insane. I'm like, and people are going, I don't know, I'm not getting any feedback. And I was just like, you're killing me. So, or my favorite is the CAPTCHA that is ridiculous. Like it's like, you know,
just, you can't read it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, I've tried three times now. I think that's a Q. No, maybe it's a G. Not sure. And eventually people are just, nobody's going to go through those hurdles to do that. So, you know, if you want people to, if you want to interact with your audience, if you want to get press, you got to make it easy to contact you. Yes, you might occasionally get a piece of spam, but I'll take a spam message if the next one's from the Wall Street Journal.
My telephone number and my email address have been on my blog for 11 years.
Same here.
Yep.
Yep.
And I don't get phony phone calls. And guess what?
Yep.
Google's pretty good at catching spam. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they want to get me, I'm a direct ring, you know.
It's in every show that I do in the show notes, too. So you kind of. Yeah.
And what
happens, it's not hard to find us.
Yeah. And what happens when you answer the phone? What's the thing you always hear on the other end? Oh my gosh, you picked up the phone. You're like, yeah, that's why it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
And I use the same phone number for my business as I use for my podcast. So, you know, I get all kinds of crazy calls.
So do you guys see that and I've been trying to follow this a little bit too, that the decline, the gradual slow decline of radio listening, do you guys think it's following a kind of similar kind of path to the increase in podcasting? Do you think that that's the bigger thing that we're seeing here from a macro view, is that as radio declines, podcasting grows, or do you guys think that radio is going to continue to be really, really big and podcasting is just going to kind of chip along?
Most radio is music based. So, I mean, you have to look at it first off. It's most of it's music based. And I think Spotify and Pandora have done more to harm radio than podcasting. Now, mm-hmm. on the talk side, yeah, I mean, there obviously is podcasting and niches. But I really think when you look at what's hurt radio the most, I think it has to be on the music side.
Yeah. That is certainly true.
Now, podcasting is nice because mobile phones, I mean, we all know mobile is what now, 70%, Todd? We're seeing 70. I'm not sure where you're seeing, but we're seeing 70% to mobile devices now on downloads. And that means, you know, that's, people always talk about the connected car. The connected car
is this. This is the hub that people take with them. They get in the car. The car, in my mind, the car is just a really connected car is really just a fancy Bluetooth speaker. And people are able to listen to the podcast there and then out of the car, and they can listen while they're walking through the grocery store. I mean, how many people here have listened to a podcast while they're in a grocery store? I mean, I do it all the time.
Here's the thing, you know, and if you're a podcaster and you have kids that are above 10 and have a phone, look what they're doing when they're in a car. That's mm-hmm. the future of radio. Mm-hmm. You know, they are not listening to the radio. Okay. They're listening to radio because their parents forced them to listen to the radio.
What's their own personal listening device is what they're going to plug into, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Paul Colgan was saying how his, I forget, 8-year-old, 9-year-old daughter was in the car one day and they didn't have their phone, and he turned on the radio, and she's like, well, like, she didn't have a clue what it was. And he's like, well, no, they picked the songs. And she goes, well, why would you do that? It was just like so foreign to her. Like, this doesn't make any sense. There's no logical sense to it. So,
and she wanted him to replay. Can you replay that song again? Yeah.
Guys, do you think that one of the big limiting factors to podcast consumption gets back to battery life and these smartphones? I mean, do you think people are still limiting their consumption of podcasts based on concern for their batteries?
I've never asked that question.
For me, it's never been battery. I hear people go, wait, is that going to chew up all my data? And I'm like, I have a...
Oh, yeah. Well, both.
Yeah,
right?
Outside the U.S., because people forget in the U.S., outside the U.S., you're paying on a gigabyte download or a megabyte download plans. So, you know, I tell people, don't freaking encode your podcast at 320 kilobits per second. You're costing people money. Be reasonable about it. But yeah, I mean, I think people do have concerns about their data plans. Absolutely. And that's why the download is going to continue to be prevalent, because people are just downloading when they're on Wi-Fi, and then they can play it back and not chew up their data plan.
Yeah, that's I made a tutorial at learntosubscribe.com that shows people how to use the podcast app from Apple to subscribe to a podcast. And the minute I showed them how to subscribe, I also said, and here's how you put it so that it only downloads when you're on, you know, Wi-Fi. Because that's the thing I always hear. Oh, people get excited about it. And they're like, oh, wait, what about my data plan? So that's always been the thing I've heard.
Yeah, me too.
Though I did see that what was it, T-Mobile or somebody, or Verizon was putting out a campaign here this holiday season that they were going to double your data plan for the same amount of money or something like that. There was some campaign that I saw. So these carriers are competing with each other over the value that they have around their data plans. And I think that's probably a good sign.
Well, as we're getting close here to the bottom of the hour, I am going to have to bounce, but I think the underlying thing of spaces, and I think Rob, we're just going to continue to see the same growth we have been seeing, and that, you know, the tools are going to continue to get better, and Google Play coming to space is a good thing, and we'll see what kind of impact they have. And again, if they make 10%, stakes on me in Vegas. I will like flip the lid if they actually hit 10%.
Yeah.
If they can hit 10% in a year, that would be over the top.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not saying they're hitting earlier. I was just saying that to me would be the ideal goal of where we would see them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And before we go, let's talk a little bit about podcast conferences really quick. What's the big
why are you saying it plural?
I just wonder.
I think we're down to one big one now, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, is there going to be some other events out there that are important for podcasting besides Podcast Movement?
Well, I'm going to be at podfest.us. That's down in Florida. It's basically a Florida podcaster meetup that's just on steroids. It's Jared Easley and a bunch of other folks, Glenn the Geek from horseradionetwork.com, and they just have a fairly large size there, so they kind of expanded it this year to podfest.us.
So New Media Expo is definitely gone, toast, kaplooey, history.
As near as I know, it's dead.
Is it as in like never coming back or completely... I know it's not happening this year.
Yeah, I think unlike the Lord, it ain't coming back. yeah, I don't know. I'm sad. I mean, yeah. I ran it, and Todd, we worked together to run it 1 year the track, and Rob, you were there with, you were one of the original sponsors of it with Microsoft back in the day. So, and mm-hmm. and Dave, you ran the track. So I think all four of us have had intimate relations.
We've all done a tour.
That sounded bad. We ended it right.
Yeah, it did sound
bad. We've all had in depth or very involved with New Media Expo over the years. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's sad that it, you know, it's gone away. In our podcast movement, you know, they've done a great job, and that seems to be the big show right now. And that one will be the week of 4th of July in Chicago. And then there'll be other smaller regional shows. I think the second big one, the biggest one will be, you know, LA Podfest. Again, that one's more geared towards the end users, the consumers, than the podcasters. So I think for the podcasting one, I think the big show really is only one big show now, and that's the podcast movement show.
So Daniel posted in the chat that the social media marketing world is expensive for intermittent podcasters, but I kind of see that as an important conference for podcasters. What do you guys think?
Well, right, the same week as NAB.
Yeah.
So, so, and the question is, not many podcasters can afford what, the $1,500 or $1,000 or whatever it is, the cost just to get a ticket to it. And also, I'll be honest, the social media marketing world is a little marketing
niche. We'll call it niche.
It's niche. Yeah, I have another word for it that I think, Rob, you and I have used a little bit in some of those events. But probably.
Though we have to be fair about it and say that they have driven quite a bit of attention in the podcasting space over the last couple of years, which has been good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think we all feel a little dirty as we get too close to it, right?
The reason I've never been to it is they keep having it the same week as NAB. And from the Lips and Pro side of things, NAB is a much more important show and for us.
So speaking of NAB, I know Rob Walsh, you're going to be there. I know Todd, are you planning on being
there? No, we're not going to NAB this year. No.
Okay.
We've already mapped out about five smaller niche category shows we're going to go to. So we're actually taking the budget that we would have spent like at NAB, and then we're going to go to niche category shows. So we're already scheduled to be one in February, and then we're going to hit, we think that's really where it's at right now for us.
Yeah, I'm actually doing the same. I'm actually trying to look at that as well, trying to go after the really popular genres in podcasting, and try and just make sure that those folks know that there's options for hosting podcasts.
Yeah, well, I'll be at in February. I'll be at the what was NRB, which is now Proclaim 16, which was National Religious Broadcasters.
That's funny. We're going to the same one.
Yeah, we were there. Yeah, we were there last year.
Hey guys, I got to join you guys too.
I'm gonna say, NRB. When is that? Where is that?
It's in Nashville.
See, that's drivable for me.
Yeah. Hey Rob, I have to mention. Mm-hmm. What were you guys thinking?
What? What do you mean? Which Rob?
Rob Greenlee. What were you guys thinking?
What are you talking about?
I heard an advertisement on the radio for
Speaker. Oh, that little piece of news. Okay.
I was.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I was like, what? You're advertising?
Yeah. So as you guys both know, Speaker has a relationship with iHeartRadio. And so we're in a deal with them, with Clear Channel, to run a national online broadcast radio ad campaign across the country for Spreaker. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, that sets you back a few pennies. Yeah. Ka-ching, 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 ka-ching.
It was part of a deal with those guys.
Oh, that's the type of deal that pays back dividends. But yeah, I heard your ad.
I can't share too much details on that, but yeah.
So I was like, what? So you guys are big time Charlie Brown there and advertising on the radio.
Well, we'll see if it works.
So anyway, do we need to cover anything else?
I think we covered pretty much everything we could possibly cover. But
all right.
So we're not going to be back with the show next week.
No, I'll be live at CES. So just as a pitch, if you want to see how we do live, how podcasters do live at a trade show, TPN.TV starting Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific will be live with a new guest every 15 minutes, 130 vendors over 4 days, and it's going to be pretty crazy. We are 100% booked. We've never been 100% booked at this point, but we have every slot filled for every minute that we're live during CES. Now, if they show up, that's another thing, but we'll have plenty of.
So, Todd,
I've got to ask Todd, I'll put you on the spot. Which is the one interview you're looking forward to?
Because we're all in different time slots. Some of the people I want to talk to is when, like, Don Bain will be online. So I think I'm aligned with the Ford CEO. I think I'm going to be on with him. Be honest with you, I haven't looked exactly on every hour by hour that I'll be on and who I'm matched up with. But it's the weirdest stuff will come in and make us the most excited. Some guy will show up with something and it'll go, this is, and we're like, what is that? And the next thing you know, I'm like shelling out my credit card. So I bought stuff right during the interview, literally. I'm sitting there, I ordered it while the guy's talking. So if you see me reaching for my wallet during the live show, you'll know it's something cool. So, and that's the run joke. How much has CES impacted our wallets during the show?
Mm-hmm.
Todd, did you get your new handheld 4K video camera?
Yes, I do. I have it right here. My Osmo.
Your Osmo. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. But I'm not going to be using this primarily for interviews. I'm just going to use this for fun run through stuff. If you guys haven't seen this yet, this is a gyro stabilized camera by DJI. It is totally awesome.
Todd's got all the geeky gadgets, doesn't he?
And plus, I have totally 15 boxes waiting to be picked up by FedEx on Monday with all our gear for the studio. So it's not cheap to do one of these events. $3,000 in shipping just to get stuff in and out of here. So
the next time we're doing a new media show will be on January 16th.
That's correct.
And I'm hoping to have Sarah Van Mosel from Acast and WNYC fame on the program for that week.
Sarah's good people. I love Sarah. So she'll be a lot of fun to have on.
Yep, definitely.
And we'll definitely be able to dog her a little bit about this East Coast-centric media reporting that's going on.
She's not going to complain about it.
Oh, no.
So going around the table here, starting with Dave, how can they reach you, Dave?
Schoolofpodcasting.com. On Twitter, I'm at learntopodcast.
Rob?
Rob at libsyn.com.
And, of course, go ahead, Rob.
Just at Rob Greenlee on Twitter is the best place, and robgreenlee.com and Spreaker.com.
And, of course, you can reach me on Twitter at Geek News, or it's geeknews@gmail.com. Everyone that's been on the Blab today, make sure you get over to newmediashow.com and do that click of the subscribe button on the website. We want you to subscribe so that if you're not on Blab, you'll get the show anyway. And we want to thank both Rob and Dave for coming on the show today. You guys, appreciate you guys taking some time out of your Saturday. Happy New Year to everyone. Let's make it a big, prosperous one and grow our shows monumentally together. And I hope that you guys will hang out with us in the future to do so. But for my co-host, Rob, Happy New Year to you. And
Happy New Year to you, too. Yeah.
And
Happy
we'll New see Year everyone. All. And we'll see everyone here on the New Media Show. We'll take care. See you next time. Bye-bye.